So even though I just showed up here a few minutes ago, I'm here to welcome you to the beginning of the afternoon version of Track 2, I believe. And we're here to hear Pascal Costanza talk about how to make Lisp more special.
Thank you very much. Yeah. What I'm going to do in this presentation is I'm not actually going to go into too many details about the paper, because I guess that you can all read. Speak for yourself. But instead, I'm going to give you a little bit more context about what I'm currently working on, so that you get a better picture of why this may be relevant, what I've written in the paper. So dynamic scoping is very important for my work. Does everyone know here what dynamic scoping is? Who knows? Who doesn't know what dynamic scoping is? You don't know what dynamic scoping is. You don't know what dynamic scoping is. Okay, I will explain it to you later, okay? So dynamic scoping, we have special variables in Common Lisp. For example, stuff like print base, where you can say, okay, from now on in the control flow of a program, I want to print everything with print base 16, so hexadecimal. There are lots of other special variables that let you control how things are done in the control flow of a program. In Scheme, we have similar constructs with output to file. There are extensions for Scheme, fluid variables or parameter objects. I'm not going to focus on Scheme because the title for Scheme wouldn't be as sexy. It would be called How to Make Scheme More Fluid. I don't know. So this is what dynamic scoping means. So what you can do is you can bind print base to some value, do something in between, and then at a certain stage in the control flow, call print, for example, and it grabs out what print base is bound to do its job. So the interesting part here is that in between, you don't see those dynamic variables. They're just very hidden. That's important. Here are some definitions from CLTL2, because most of you already know what this is about, I'm going to skip over them. So lexical scope and indefinite scope. Is that clear? Okay. And dynamic extent and indefinite extent. Is that clear? Okay. So dynamic scope is strictly a misnomer. That's what CLTL2 says. But it's still useful and means indefinite scope and dynamic extent. Okay. So there is a paper I've written about 2 years ago, Dynamic Scoping as the Essence of AOP, Aspect-Oriented Programming. So I spent a lot of time trying to understand what aspect-oriented programming actually is. So who of you knows what aspect-oriented are? Who of you knows about aspect-oriented programming? Okay, that's a number of people. Good. So I've written this paper, Dynamic Scoping as the Essence of AOP, but there was still some confusion because the AspectJ does things like cFlow stuff that kind of looks like dynamic scoping and so on. But this actually misses the point. The more interesting point comes up in one of the examples in the AspectJ tutorial. They have a simple telecom example. This sounds very serious. So in that telecom example, it's here at this URL, you can download it. They model an application with customers, calls, so phone calls, they can make phone calls between each other, long distance calls, and local connections. And they write a simulation of this. So it just does some arbitrary phone calls between arbitrary people. And then they add aspects, timing, and billing. So the aspect timing additionally adds to the base program the timing aspect, so which means that now all the phone calls are timed. And then the billing aspect additionally adds the billing aspect. So dependent on the timing, it determines how much the phone calls actually cost and assigns that information to the phone calls. So there's one important thing in the in the description of that example. Here, that's a section of that tutorial where it says compiling and running. So they have some configuration files, timing list and billing list, that contain the file lists of base program plus aspects, and that they can feed that to the compiler. And here they can say AJC is the aspect J compiler, so they feed the timing list to the compiler, and then they can run the timing simulation. So this only contains the timing aspect, but not the billing aspect. And then when you want to have both timing and billing features, they feed the billing list to the compiler, and then they run the billing simulation. So if we try to translate that into Lisp terms, what happens here is that we actually have something like this. We activate the aspect timing, run the timing simulation, that's the first case, or we activate the aspects timing and billing, and then run the billing simulation. The only thing we don't do in Lisp is we don't have an intermediate compilation step. At least that's what I want to have. That's what I'm working on to make this work. So that I can, at runtime, add aspects or remove aspects. Actually, they're called differently in my work. So one of the results of my reasoning about what AOP is AspectL. It's an AOP extension for Common Lisp, which is actually just a number of different extensions that somehow work together. But these are different aspects of what AOP is more than C++ plus a meta object protocol. What was hard during the implementation of AspectL is that the CLOS mob implementations of different Common Lisp implementations are all somewhat or somewhat more different from each other. So you start to write compatibility stuff inside your meta classes to make this work across many implementations. And so for this reason, I dumped this. And then I started to write the closer to mob compatibility layer. So this is a compatibility layer that irons out some of the incompatibilities across CLOS implementations. It currently is available for these implementations, and I hope I can add some more. And the currently I'm working on ContextL. I really think that this notion of activating aspects at runtime and deactivating them again is more important than the notions of join point and point cuts that the aspect people are reasoning about. So I dropped this point cut stuff, and now it's called ContextL because it's not really an AOP extension anymore. So context-oriented programming. Hopefully there will be much more about this in the future. Now, in this presentation, I'm going to show you a little piece of what I've done, the DLETF framework, with an example, the special classes, and how this is implemented. So you all know setf, probably, in Common Lisp. Setf is a framework for generalized references, so you can assign stuff to almost any kind of reference. For example, here the name of the object, the person name of the object P, can be set to Pascal. What we want is we want the same thing for bindings, so that you can say let F person name P bind this to Pascal for the dynamic extent of the code that is to follow. And when we return from that form, then the old value is visible again. We LetF already exists, for example, in Lisp machines and in some implementations, some CLIM implementations. I would like to make this more explicit that this is actually dynamic scoping or dynamically scoped, so I added the D in front of it. So it's DLetF. Because I think it would also be useful, or maybe useful, I don't know, to have a lexically scoped version. So it would be better to distinguish them more clearly. So this is what I want to have. So I'm going to give you a short demo what this means, because I think it's better to understand when you see it in action. Okay. This doesn't work here. Okay, doesn't matter. So this is a listener in LispWorks. I'm going to load context L. Yeah, it loads the compatibility layer and lots of other stuff. So here is in context user. I define a class person with a slot name, accessor person name, and I make this a special class. I compile this undefined function in. All right. Pair programming in action. So in package context L user, I can now define a person with the make instances called with the unknown keyword name. All right. Okay, so if I now see, call person name, then I get Dr. Jekyll. And now I want to be able to say bind person name of P to Mr. Hyde. Okay, this doesn't work because the slot is not special. Abort. So let's try this again. Okay, so now here in this scope I see Mr. Hyde for the binding of person name. And when I open another thread, this is the important part here, I open another thread. Here person name is still bound to Dr. Jekyll. So this is indeed dynamically scoped. It's bound only in the current thread. So what this effectively means is that you have more than one binding at runtime for a single slot. Okay? This is what I want, and as you can see, it works. Okay.
Right.
That's the behavior
right.
Of most implementations,
right.
But it isn't.
Right. I'm going to say more about it when I tell you how this is implemented, actually. So this is another example. So the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing is somewhat useless. But here, this is a thing that is, as far as I know, can be done in CLIM. So they have medium objects where they can bind the ink of a medium and the style of a medium to certain values. So a medium can be a screen or a printer or something else. And then call some graphical operations on the medium. And so again, it's also useful that this is all confined to the current thread so that other threads are not affected.
The lattice itself is only a framework, so it's possible to plug in other things in there. The special classes are just an example, and they use the hooks of dlatf. Other plugins are also possible, so lists, arrays, structures, hash tables, and so on. Implementation. Lattice on Lisp machines, I've been told, I've never actually seen a Lisp machine, unfortunately, but I've been told that Lattice on Lisp machines also works like that, so that it is truly dynamically scoped. Because they have some kind of internal machine operations that allow them to do that. I hope John L. will tell me more about this. So Lattice on so-called stock hardware, that's a term from Lispers, that's very funny. Lattice on stock hardware is usually implemented by global side effects. So you can see this in the sources of MacClim. They combine global side effects with unwind protect, and this is going to affect other threads. That's not what we want. This is actually more closely related to LetF globally in some Lisp implementations. So here is how LetF globally works. It takes medium ink into a temporary variable, medium style into a temporary variable, then does an unwind protect. So it sets medium ink to red, medium style to bold, executes some code, and on return sets those slots back to the temporary variables. So that's what LetF globally expands into. But as you can see, because it uses setF, it affects other threads. And that's not what we want. So what I've actually found in the hyperspec is procv. Procv is some of the one, sorry?
Just joking. You found it.
Yeah. Can you describe this in any other reasonable way? So procv is one of those curious things that you at first don't understand at all why it's even there. But it's actually proven to be very, very useful here. Procv allows binding one or more, that's from the hyperspec, allows binding one or more dynamic variables whose names may be determined at runtime. That's good. The bindings of the dynamic variables are undone on exit from procv and provides a handle on the mechanism for dynamic variables. So what you said is true. My implementation depends on the fact that special variables are also handled in a thread-safe way, so to speak. But in all common Lisp implementations I've tried out, that's actually the case. So it's not guaranteed by the ANSI standard, but all common Lisp implementations do it like that. That's good enough for me. I don't need a language specification that gives me a denotational semantics for that. So the dlatf protocol works like that. So this is what you have to adhere to if you want to plug in your own stuff. Instead of storing your values in the actual places, you store so-called special symbols in those places, and then you bind the values as symbol values. If symbol access is nil, you access the symbol values. And if it's not nil, you access the symbols as such. We're going to see this for a special class. So here is what this expands to. So if you have this dlatf construct, this expands to this construct. Procv, it sets symbol access to true, gets the symbols out of these places in a list, and provides the values that you want to bind them to in another list. And then you provide the code, the body.
Sorry? When you say symbols, you don't really mean so much symbols.
I mean symbols. Really, really symbols.
So where is that happening?
That's not happening here. Your own code has to get those special symbols from my package. Yeah, right. So when you initialize your places, you have to initialize them with my special symbols from my package and then bind the values to those symbols. Okay? So here is this example I already showed you. So there is a typo. Special T switches this special access on. By default, it's not switched on. And you know the fact that all slot accesses are actually redirected to slot value using class in the MetaObject protocol. This is how it's specified in the MetaObject protocol. And so what I do internally in the special classes is that I redefine slot value using class. Special class is the first parameter is specialized on special class. The third is specialized on special effective slot definition. So I get the slot symbol just by calling the next method, which does the raw slot access. And then if symbol access is true, I just return the slot symbol. Otherwise, I ask if it's bound. Then I just take the symbol value. And otherwise, I call this slot unbound function that produces me the error message that this slot is unbound. So that's for the read case. For the write case, it's similar. Questions? Yeah?
I'm not perfectly up on all my method calling here. Is the setup that you're specifying there global to a whole class, or would it be individual accessors on that class that you could have dled app on? In other words, what you defined in your demo,
yeah.
I only saw it on one slot.
Right.
Would what you had there have worked on 30 different slots on the same object?
Yes.
And there's no way to limit it so that it would only work
no,
on
no, the no, same? Of course, it's a way to limit it. So if only the slots where this keyword is set to T, then you have the special access, otherwise you have the default access. Okay, yeah?
So this is a good idea, but it seems like the symbol access is not really a good use of a special variable itself. It's just a stylistic point, but symbol access, when it's bound to T, only has this very narrow scope, right? You don't ever bind symbol access in a way that the binding lasts a long time and people are accessing it down in unforeseen places. When you do that, you're only accessing it very locally, right?
Yes.
So you could do the same job without using a special variable, just by say having two slots for every slot, one to keep track of the symbol and one to keep track of the value or something like that. I mean, it's just some of us hate special variables and are always looking for ways to get rid of them. I just want to point out that this one would be easy to get rid of. So.
Oh, what you want to get rid of is the symbol access.
The symbol access star.
This one?
Yeah.
It's hard to get rid of it because how do you pass it to this method?
Well, you have to massage the form anyway, don't you? So
no, but the parameter list of this method is specified by the MetaObject protocol.
It could be a slot within the slot.
The point is you've got a dledf form. The dledf form has a very stylized syntax, right? It's a
right.
list of these forms.
Right.
So every one of those forms could easily be converted into something that would, instead of getting the, could be converted lexically or syntactically from something that, instead of getting the value, got the symbol.
He's relying on Procy to do the thread safe stuff. And that's why he uses this.
Oh, no, I grant you, it's exactly the same in every way, except I think you should get rid of the special variable. So never mind.
Why should I get rid of the special variable?
Because they're useful for things like print base, where there's a very wide scope to it. And you wouldn't want to have to pass it down to everybody. But they're not very. They're a kludge for very local things like this. In fact, this looks like a kludge. I mean, it's a great, wonderful, clever kludge. But the fact that you have to access the same thing two different ways, when really you're accessing two different things. You're saying, give me the symbol corresponding to the slot.
Okay, that's what you mean.
Whereas normally the syntax means, get me the value of the slot.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, so what you say is that might be a simpler way to make this protocol work, to distinguish between. Yeah, okay.
Like you wouldn't have to check, is this special variable set to T before doing it? You just always do the same.
This was just the easiest way to get there. So that's all I have to say about this. Other questions?
In the def class form, does the kernel special T make the slot definition a special slot definition? Is that what
I'm saying? Right. So this, the special T turns this into a special effective slot definition. Otherwise, it's a standard effective slot definition, and then you get all the optimizations. That's why I did it that way. So, yeah. Okay? Good. There are some technical issues. I don't know if they're really interesting, but the CLOS specification specifies that slot initialization, so when an instance is created, that they may bypass the slot accessors. So this is, of course, bad for me, but fortunately, I can fix this in shared initialize. So I just shift the special slots to actual special symbols. And then, as you've seen in the demo, this bug was actually intentional, you can change a slot from being non-special to being special. So underneath, it just automatically shifted the slot to a special symbol. This, unfortunately, this doesn't work in Allegro because they optimize the slot accessors in the first pass, and when they do the class redefinition, they don't de-optimize the slot accessors. So that should probably be fixed. I don't know if they fixed it in 7.0. Okay. Yeah?
Why can't you change it back? The top of the second bullet?
Ah, okay. Switching it from non-special to special is easy,
right.
Because you just shift the value to a special symbol. But the way back is more problematic because you may have, at the time you want to switch it back, may have more than one binding at the same time. And I don't have a way...
I mean, if you recompile the whole thing, it's fine.
Yeah, if you recompile the whole thing, it's fine. Yeah, but I don't see a way how to collapse the several bindings into one. Not yet.
Can you tell how many bindings there are?
No. Unless there is some kind of internal functionality provided by the commonness implementation, but I'm not aware of that. Okay. You can add other data structures to DLETF, like arrays, lists, structures, and so on. Unfortunately, they don't provide meta-object protocols, so you have to do some more hacking to get this to work by shadowing the symbols of the common list package, so replacing all aref and alt and what a car, cuder, and so on. See the paper for that. Actually, in the paper, I also leave this as an exercise to the reader. efficiency concerns. I haven't done any large benchmarks yet. So efficiency concerns, in my experience, it only matters when you have large programs. For small toy examples, it doesn't really tell you anything. But there are some considerations here. So for dynamic scoping, there are different implementation techniques, shallow binding, deep binding, equations vectors that all have different trade-offs. There are papers by Henry Baker where they are explained. You have a double indirection because you access the symbol and then the symbol value. It's a double indirection. But there are... this may not hurt. So for my PhD, I've implemented something where I also added double indirection. And in some cases, this actually made the program faster. So there is some kind of CPUs nowadays are not predictable. So this may actually not hurt. Slot access, as you've seen, only the special slots are accessed through the slot value using class. For the standard slots that are not special, the CLOS can bypass all this machinery. So at least only the special slots are affected. Okay, summary. DLETF is part of AspectL, which is available here. There is also, in AspectL, there's also a concept called special function, which means that a special function is a generic function whose method slot is actually a special slot. So within the dynamic scope of a program, you can change the methods associated with a generic function. Sorry?
With added methods.
Right, with added methods, dynamically scoped. And DLATF will also be part of Context L, which is not available yet. Sometime in the autumn I will publish this. Yeah, and there's more to come. We have a student currently who has finished his master thesis. He made an extension to Common Lisp to implement quantum algorithms. And there are some very, very vague ideas that this notion of having more than binding for a slot can be interpreted as a superposition of quantum state, but we're not sure yet. Okay, that's it.
So we have time for some questions? Comments?
Yeah.
Did I hear you mention in the beginning that you're thinking of implementing something similar for lexical, lineup?
Yeah.
I've made
some first steps in that direction, but I forgot to keep it.
Do you make that part of Context L?
I have no plans for that.
It's just a toy. It wasn't something you're.
It was just it's a lot of work. It's just tedious coding, lots of tedious coding because you can only do this by actually shadowing symbols from Common Lisp and lots of those. Yeah.
I can appreciate that there isn't much of a performance hit going through a class of bus.
Yeah.
But if you start specialising AREF, shadowing AREF, aren't you about to take a very great performance hit?
Probably, yes.
And Kevin Helms can't get it.
I'm a researcher, I don't care about performance.
You pick up the graduate students.
Right.
If you have this wonderful environment access package I've heard about, you might be able to define a compiler macro that can reduce back to the Common Lisp version. So hurry up with that environment package.
that's true.
Cute.
That's true. Yeah,
very
right.
Cute.
Yeah. I actually stopped doing the lexical LetF stuff because I didn't find any uses for it. So if you have any ideas what you could use this for, then maybe I'm considering to do this again. Yep.
Roughly how many lines of code to implement DLETF?
It's
for the classes.
Just the DLETF or also the special class?
The class together.
Sorry?
Yeah. And the classes.
And the classes. DLETF itself, I think, is one page of code.
Mm-hmm.
And the special class, I don't know exactly, but I would say 2 or 3 pages. So it's an example that proves that the CLOS mob actually works well.
Without any syntax.
Right. It's very, very clean, very very aesthetical code. It's really, really nice. Sorry?
After you wrote the end pages, it's closer to half.
No, this one actually works quite well on most implementations without any compatibility there.
Hey, let's thank our speaker.